Hey, welcome to the High Business Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Martinez. Today we have a special guest. Mr. Brennan from Budget Dog. How you doing today?
How you doing, man? Good to see you again.
I'm good, man. I'm good. I met Brennan on Twitter, and we have some acquaintances on Twitter. And I love Twitter. Twitter's such an amazing space. You meet a lot of genuine people on there, and I think a lot of people hate social media because everybody feels like everybody's fake on it. But there's a lot of cool genuine people on there, so I think Brennan here is definitely one of those people that fits into that category. So I appreciate him coming on today.
Yeah, man, excited to be here, and I echo that statement. I feel like there's a lot of fake out there, but if you find the right people, like anything, there's so many quality people I've met, and the relationships I've built over the years I've been on there, which is about five of this year. I think I got in 2019. My Twitter account says I joined in 2012, but I wasn't really active. It was like a personal account way back in the day. I think that was in college at the time. So it's really grown, man. And other people, man, it's been awesome. I love social media, and I think it's always focusing on the positives.
So I'm the same way. I got into Twitter probably like 2012, 2013, maybe 2014. I don't even remember. I have to look, but I didn't start like actively messing with it till probably about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yep.
So I think it's been about 3 years.
Yeah.
But I think social media is a very, very cool place. But I mean, to get where you gotten in that amount of time is pretty amazing. Hitting year five now since 2019. So
it's been a blessing. It's been a blessing. Like what I expected when I first started was not what I have now. Like what I have now wasn't even in the plans. It really wasn't. And so like, the way I started was just to share my story and help people out with personal finance. And like, that's about it. It was kind of like a hobby to me, honestly, at first. And, you know, 5 years later, I own a business and I have, you know, let's call it 15 people or so underneath me. And like, never in a million years would I have thought I would leave Deloitte from this. I would start my own brand. I would start my own business and I would have people working for me. But here we are. And, you know, life comes at you quick.
What were you doing? You said Deloitte. What's Deloitte?
Yeah, Deloitte's a CPA firm, one of the biggest four in the world. Deloitte, KPMG, Ernst & Young, and PwC are the big four, they call them. And I was there doing the audit. I was in the audit practice. They usually have like a consulting practice, tax practice, auditing practice for the most part. You know, those are the big three and within the big four, if that makes sense. And, you know, we were going into companies, big companies, all over the United States. So some of the biggest companies you would think of, like Meta, right? I think Deloitte audits them. It wasn't one of my clients, but Deloitte audits them. All these huge companies, you always have the auditor, the tax people, the consulting people come in, and they, you know, they obviously do the reporting, like the 10K, the 10Qs. They also do a consulting on, you know, a project or whatever on a one-off basis. They might do the tax work for these companies. And so I was in the audit practice. I was doing like 10Ks and 10Qs for all these big public companies. Also, I was in the private space in a big way. So outside of the public companies, we kind of did the same type of work for the private companies. And so I really dominated the private space at Deloitte in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I did that for 7 years. So I worked my way up to manager. I saw kind of I saw the writing on the wall. I was like, I don't want to be a partner. And that was kind of the natural progression. It's like I was at manager. So there was one step in between me to go to the partner, which was senior manager. And I was like, do I really want to do that? Not really. So I kind of dove into my own thing. And that's where Budget Dog kind of came.
Awesome. That is a very interesting story. And you, this kind of, when did you quit and transition into 100% Budget Dog? Because I think a lot of people, like, did you do it part-time for a couple of years, 2-3 years to kind of bear fruit? Like, what was that transition?
I have a weird risk tolerance, right? So I definitely like to take big swings, but I like to do it calculated. And I don't like to do it like recklessly, like the idea of an entrepreneur out there. I'm a CPA. I'm kind of type A, right? So like, that's like my personality. So like when we did it, we started June 2019 for Budget Dog account. I was working at Deloitte during this whole entire time. So I had this progression in, you know, the first 16 months, I made $0. Again, it was a hobby. It was just for fun. And then once I realized, hey, this is a business opportunity, there's actually some things here I can help people with and do what I love to do, I started to kind of put the hobby and turn it into a business. And that was around, I want to say September 2021. sorry, September 2020. And that is when it started taking off. And I started thinking, okay, long term, what am I going to make this? And how am I going to really make this jump? Or is it going to be a business, quote unquote, as a side hustle? Or is it like full time? And I proved to myself, yeah. I said, over the next 12 months, I'm going to at least make at or above my 9-to-5 income. And if I do that and I can prove myself, I'm taking that jump. And so that was August of 2021. And when we made that jump, August 2021 to current day, it's, what is that, 2.5 years or so? It's been nothing short of amazing. And, you know, there's been ups and downs. There's been some scares. There's been some, naturally, you own a business. It doesn't always go graciously. But here we are now, man. And we're still growing. And I think we're still scaling at a pretty rapid rate. And I want to 2-3x the business over the next year or so. And we're on pace to do that, but it takes a lot, obviously. So not everybody's built for entrepreneurship. And I think taking that leap of faith is a bigger step than most people make it out to be.
100% fact. How is like, I think you just had a new baby too.
Yeah,
as well,
we had
right?
Little Ellie Gray. She was she's going to be 5 months on the four in the four, about 2 weeks. She's four. And a half, I guess she's 4.5 months right now. So we had her September of 2023, and that was the second one, with our first one being Logan, and she came 2 years before, so she's about 2.5. But yeah, man, dad life. Actually, funny enough, you say that, is right when I left Deloitte, 3 weeks after my first one, not Ellie, but Logan, she was born. So I quit my job, we paid off her house, and she was born like within a 3 weeks period. So that was a huge transition, to say the least. And then all of a sudden we had to move across the country because she was diagnosed with Dravet syndrome. And so like, it was a lot, very, very quick. But life comes at you quick, like I said. And so you got to be prepared, but you also got to be able to be shifty and think on the spot as well.
What's crazy about your story is I did the same thing. So I was working at my job. I literally worked all the way up to my wife was about to have the baby, and I took my vacation time, all my stuff, and then I quit. So I haven't had a job since my first one was born.
6 years ago. Wow, that's a long time. Yeah, it was probably scary. I'm sure, like, taking that leap of faith, man. You're the provider. You know, it's a different type of responsibility.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really like bringing this on because, like, entrepreneurship, there's no right time to do it. And I think, like, I'm sure your wife gave you heat just like mine did about, you sure you want to do this right now?
She was really supportive. And like I said, we had that runway and she was working at her job, but there's something with women in particular, when they have the baby right before that, you know, some of them say like a lot of times, and I don't want to call off the wrong way here, but like a lot of times people are like, I don't care to be a stay-at-home mom. And Erin told me that a lot. She was like, you know, I want to continue to work. It's not that important. You know, I want to be present, but I don't necessarily need to be a stay-at-home mom. Well, 4 months into the journey, obviously my daughter had her first seizure and things shifted very quickly as far as like her need to be at home. It was like a biological need almost, right? And so at that point, we had both agreed, in fact, that, hey, we're going to turn I just jumped off the ledge, essentially. I'm going to figure this out, make this work to where you can stay at home full time. And then we also just continue with my business. And so like there was that transition period from about, let's call it February of 2021 all the way to August of 2021, where we were like building actively and getting really aggressive so she could leave her job so we could focus on Logan full time. Not to mention we had to move across the country. We didn't have to move, but we wanted to move for the best sake of our daughter. And so like with that transition she's going to have to quit a job anyway. And I had to make it work. And so there was a lot of stress around that, obviously a lot of pressure, but like we've done it. It's been a year now since we've lived in Texas and it's been awesome.
That's crazy. It's so weird, like hearing your story. Cause like literally I moved after my second one was born and I literally moved cross country during COVID. And one thing I really want to highlight too is that COVID was like a great little time for entrepreneurs after everybody switched from home. You kind of had a lot of people trying to look for other type of learning, education, side hustles type thing. And people that really honed in made a lot of money during that time. And they kind of set their foothold for the rest of their lives, it seems like, off of that little runway that happened. I think you're definitely a product of that. And I've seen a lot of other people blow up during that 100%. Time period too. So
I look back at that time period, like, you know, at the time I didn't realize what was happening, like in the moment. I was doing it, but I didn't really realize the impact. And now I'm looking back, man, and my wife and I talked about this a lot, and we're like, that time period literally changed our lives forever in a positive way. And so I think a lot of people look at those times and define those events as either, you know, they define them in a negative way. And I think you get to choose when there's distress and there's change and all this kind of stuff in our society, there's a chance right in front of you. There's an opportunity right in front of you. And it's the way you look at it and the way you perceive it and the way you act upon it that you can choose the way it goes. And a lot of good things happen, a lot of bad things happen. But at the end of the day, we look back and we're like, man, this forever changed our life in a big way.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. COVID was a blessing in disguise for a lot of different people. And I think coming out right now, people are kind of settled and or stabilized now, and they're seeing the fruits of their labor. Because I think I started Hivemind in 2020, so this was right in the middle of COVID. Now it's 4 years later. What happened?
So weird to think about like that. Like when I. Yeah, like 4 or 5 years. That's wild.
Yeah, a lot has changed. How did you adapt? And like, I really want to know. Like you said, you really honed in the beginning stages, right when that happened. Like, what was something you did early on to kind of like spark up that thing you're building? Like, you remember what things?
Oh man, I remember very vividly, actually. Like, so when I first quit my job, the main focus point was. I was making money, but did I have a business? And I would argue I did not.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that can make money online, but there's also business structure, systems, all that kind of stuff. And so my main focal point was exactly that, building that underneath me, building the legs under the table. And I didn't have any of that. It was just like, hey, I could, you know, post a product, people would buy it, great. But like, what if that dries up tomorrow? Like, where are the systems? Where are the people? Where are the business, the technology, all that kind of stuff? That was my main focal point. Getting the right talent in the door as well was a huge focal point. So like now, you know, I would argue now the level of talent I have from the social media game is top tier. And I think there's a reason we do so well is because of that. It's not because of me. It's because of the people around me. So like, I think that's a really, really important piece of it. And to systemize the business is, and I'm still doing it to this day. Literally, I just got off the treadmill a while back and I'm sitting there and I have a notes app pulled up and I'm like writing all the inefficiencies of the business. And I'm thinking, I'm going to write everything down. Then I'm going to go implement fixes for those different things and solutions. And so I think that's one of the biggest things. And then when I quit my job, I think the other huge thing for me was the mental shift. Like I felt on top of the world, let's call it the first month or two. And there was that superficial high. I just gave my boss the FU pretty much. You know, I was able to take control, all that kind of stuff. Now reality sets in, that emotion kind of wears off and then you go the opposite direction. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, especially myself, I don't have like a huge risk appetite for just like doing that. And so when I did that, it was like, there was a high and low and there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of nervousness, a lot of like, can I do this? A lot of doubt, a lot of like uncertainty. And I think like everybody goes through that. In fact, for anybody that's actually successful, and I think it's actually a positive. Because when you do hit those levels, it tells you who you are and you have to figure it out or you do or die. And so are you going to figure it out or are you going to go back to where you've always felt comfortable in? And so I decided at that moment I was going to make this work and I was going to figure it out somehow, somewhere. So, you know, it's led to great things. But again, it was not the level of stress during the regular day for as a business owner is not the same as when you work W-2. And there's no shot at W-2. Do your thing. I was a W-2 worker at one point. My wife was too. But like for me personally, at this stage of my life, I love entrepreneurship. And I think there's a self reflection element of it is you have to fix yourself to fix your business a lot of times. And I think you grow as a person also a lot faster a lot of times than somebody that's going through the mundane stuff because you're forced to. It's not like you have a choice. You have to or you do or die.
Yeah. You have to face that problem head on. There's no skirting
it. Like I used to be able to skirt a lot of personal things, let's call it, at the job, but I can't do that.
Yeah, face stuff head on. I want to ask you this question because everybody goes through the highs and lows. How did you manage the low points? Because I think a lot of us entrepreneurs they feel that pressure, and a lot of people can't hang. So how did you deal with that pressure when the lows did come? Because they come, and they come hard and they come
yeah.
all the time. They come, like,
I think preparation or expectation of those to come is the number one thing, because I think if you expect greatness or you expect, like, hey, I just make money online, hang out on a beach and sip margaritas, you're going to get hit really hard and you're not going to be able to, you're not going to expect it. So you don't have your footing at all. But, like, if you kind of expect it, you might not expect the level of low, but you can expect something to come. I think it prepares you in a different way. I think the other piece of it is, like, having a support system. Because, like, having my wife, having an entrepreneurship group you can talk to and voice your problems to, because a lot of this communication, it's like when you bottle stuff up and think about this stuff on your own, like, you're the only person dealing with this, you're not, then you start to, like, self-sabotage. But if you can leverage, you know, communication with people in similar situations, or at least people that can relate to you or understand you, i.e. wife, spouse of some sort, I think it's going to give you that confidence or at least that push to keep you going, keep you moving, and realizing, hey, this isn't a forever thing. If it's a forever thing, then, like, you probably don't have a business model to begin with, but there's going to be ups and downs in the business. There always will be. And having those two things together at all times is super important. Expectation and also a support system.
No, that's a really good answer. I tell my wife all the time, like, I would not be doing what I'm doing now without her. Like, bottom line, would not be able 100%, to do it,
man. There's her. Not a chance without Aaron.
Yeah. So, that, for everybody out there, choose who you marry. It's an important decision, and it will make or break pretty much your life.
I agree. At that point, everything, not just finance. And I talk finances a lot. Obviously, that's my brand, but and that's a big piece of it. It would wreck your finances, but, like, it will also wreck your whole family life. Like, a separation or divorce within a family wrecks people. And it's so common in today's world. And I think a lot of it comes down to lack of communication on four key pillars, you know, finance being one of those typically. So, like, you fix those things, those big, big movers. And I think the rest of it kind of comes together. And always communicate. I've learned that so the hard way too many times, not communicating, whether it be relationship or business. I can't, like, that is one of the biggest revelations to me. And it sounds so simple. I get it. But, like, really living that and feeling that, like, the lack of communication, what that can actually what can happen as a result, it's mind blowing, quite honestly.
Yeah, it's really, really important. I want to jump back a little bit. When you're talking about employees and hiring, who was your first hire when you first started, and then who has been your best hire that you're like, man, why?
Oh, man, my team's gonna be listening to this, and they're I'm playing favorites here. So I'm gonna answer this way. So number one, my first hire was, let's call it a creative director, somebody that's kind of running my social medias in general, coming up with, like, creative ideas, posting on my behalf, stuff like that. That freed up a lot of time, okay. So I could focus on other areas. My best hire,
maybe best hire isn't the one thing. The most pivotal hire
that affected your business. That might be
a better question. Yeah.
No, for sure. I was kidding. My team would understand this, but I think my most pivotal hire was that first creative director, because that individual, like, sparked something I didn't know was potential, like the potential of social media. I didn't know social media. I wasn't a social media person by nature. So I was a CPA talking personal finance. Social media was not up my, I think I'd post on Instagram personally like 12 times in my life. So, like, it wasn't something I was used to or accustomed to. And it was a huge learning curve. It still is. And it's constantly evolving. Having that individual to show what could happen because of that is, I think, the most important piece. Now, obviously, everything you could argue is more important or most as important with, like, sales, marketing, technology, integrator, you know, leadership, all that kind of stuff, student success. Like, it is endless as far as, like, every piece plays a pivotal role, but if I didn't, I wouldn't have any of that without the first person, which was creative director. And so that creative director, let's title him, is, I think, the most pivotal piece, because it opened my horizons or my like understanding of, like, what could potentially be done. And when you unlock your potential and you see your potential be unlocked, then it's just a fun game. Now it becomes a game where you can play to the fullest of your ability and really push the needle a little bit. And so I would definitely say he was my first, also most important.
There's a amplification factor that you don't really realize. And I think that's what you're talking about. The amplification of that first hire. gives you the, I need to hire more people.
Because you see that being a bottleneck and you're like, okay, well, this is a bottleneck. Now I have more confidence. I know how this worked the first time ago. It's just like anything. You do it once, you do it more, and you get better and better and better, and eventually it becomes second nature.
This is one of the things where I have that person in my team too. And when I trained them, I have she was a little bit rougher on the edges, but they get better over time and they understand the mission. And like your team alignment doesn't happen at first, and you kind of have to have patience with your employees. But once they get the alignment, understand the goals and the mission,
it gets fun.
It's crazy.
It develops with time. You're right. You're 100% right. It doesn't happen overnight. It's like it naturally occurs. And, you know, I've been working on like team mission statements and values and stuff like that, culture values, but like it honestly just kind of like creates itself in a sense, right? You have people together talking all the time. You create your own culture naturally, and it's not usually forced. It's usually a reflection of you, good or bad.
Ooh, there you go. That's
topic we want to talk about. It's a reflection. I'm telling you, a lot of personal and business overlap, and it's almost like the magnifier effect, or you see your business play out the way you kind of are who you are, and it's pretty crazy.
Is most of your team overseas, or they look in the United States?
Most of my team is here in the United States. I do have some offshore, let's call it, or overseas labor, some VAs, virtual assistants. I also have one sales guy actually living in Portugal. So like he's American, moved to Portugal. So he is overseas, but he's, you know, as American as you and I. So like, no language barrier, nothing there, but like most of our labor is in house and in the United States.
I had Nick Huber on the podcast, and he was like really big into overseas labor.
So I know Nick uses Shepherd something. I forget what it's called.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but he's a really big proponent of the of the overseas hiring, and I love
support Shepherd. People. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, there's onlinejobs.ph for VAs in the Philippines. Man, there's great offshore labor. I think that's I agree with Nick. I think it's way underrated. There's phenomenal labor. We have three in particular right now. We're looking to hire a fourth actually. So like we do utilize that, and they're great. They're fantastic. And is the biggest thing you got to figure out is skill set and match that skill set with what you're looking for, with what they're trained to do. And it's pretty straightforward.
Very, very straightforward. I just hired somebody.
Like, love it. Love it.
New person.
Makes life so much easier.
Team's growing. It makes things so much easier, man. And I was looking for I need somebody to do this one thing and that's it. Like if you're good at this, let's do it. I just need help right here. But it's the overseas people. I think the internet has made it easier to find overseas talent, and it's kind of opened up you can sell to the world.
Yeah. I love it. Our products and service isn't meant for, it's geared towards United States. It's personal finance. So it's a little different, but like if you have a generalized product or even not even generalized product, but like just an informational product that can apply to other areas, like you can literally sell anywhere. And that's crazy to think about. Like you could have an online Amazon, or you could have a TikTok shop or Amazon brand, and you can literally sell to people in China. Like it's a beautiful thing. And it's, again, like people bash the internet, but again, I think you need to find the positives. Like there's endless amounts of positives with the internet and the connectivity. Like even you and I being able to meet each other was through the internet. And so I've established so many good connections and so many good valuable people just through the internet. And, you know, then we meet in real life and we connect and bond, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Let's jump a little bit into the business, man. So let's talk about the personal finance side of it. What type of products are you teaching? Let's talk about a little bit like that.
Yeah. So on the people that come and work with us traditionally are people that can't figure out how to get out of debt, people that don't know how to invest, or people that just don't have a clue of where to start. Those are our three people that we typically see in our ecosystem. As far as products and services, we have a lot of like lower ticket type of things. So we have like, you know, investing modules, courses, you know, products. We have, figuring out how to get started with your personal finances, things like that. But my book is coming out actually April 8th, officially in bookstores, Amazon, Audible, all that kind of stuff. So we have all those types of things. My big product right now, or let's call it a service slash product, is my Budget Dog Academy. And that is by far one of the most comprehensive financial things that I know of out there in the market. It kind of brings together everything. So I know a lot of people like might use an advisor. They might use a CPA. They might use a trust attorney. They might use an insurance agent. Like, we are educating on the entire, like, from start to finish piece of the puzzle. Because when people start with personal finance, they think budget and they think investing and they kind of end there. But like, it's so much bigger than that. So we really walk people through a roadmap and show them exactly what they need to be considering, educate them on that, and also apply that to their situation that makes sense for them, not for generally like a Dave Ramsey 7 baby steps. It's really strategic as to like, okay, here's all of the stuff you need to know about this topic. Here's how it applies to you. Let's apply that. Let's build your system. Let's make this really simple. And we started this about a year and a half ago, and Budget Dog Academy has literally changed like thousands of people's lives. So we've had, I think at this point, about almost 1,200 people in the academy in about a year and a half. And so what we've been able to do from a results perspective, and I post on Twitter sometimes results, but like that can't even do justification. I see results literally daily just pop up left and right, and the community support within there. You know, it's a mix of everything, right? We have, it's kind of course C module. There's modules and stuff to get you through, but there's also community. There's also a student success team of real true financial professionals, ex financial advisor, high net worth for high net worth people, RICPs. Like I'm a CPA. So like we have all these financial professionals built in there to get you support. We also have a behavioral health, financial psychologist in there, and we have a loaded team to help you. And it's also a lifetime community. So people never, they're always part of that community. And we have live calls and live group sessions and stuff like that. And we're about to do our first meetup in Austin, Texas, on March 15th. So it's something that I haven't seen out there. You know, you see financial courses, you see like budget courses. This is nothing like that. You know, people hear Budget Dog Academy and they assume, oh, that's just another budget course. It covers trust, estate planning, taxes, insurances, credit, investing, like down to the allocations, financial systems, building your actual money system, your money plan. All of that stuff is really, really critical, along with that support and guided mentorship. And so all that wrapped in essentially for a lifetime is what we do in Budget Dog Academy.
No, I think a lot, I was going to ask you about Dave Ramsey as this is going to be a social media reel. How do you feel about Dave Ramsey and your competition?
All right. So you're putting me on the spot. I love the Ramsey crew. I love Jade Warshaw. Okay. I love John Deloney. I love George Camel, his personalities. There was a time a couple years ago that I was in that process to potentially join that team. And I'm going to leave it at that. I politely declined because I think that what they preach is good for the masses. Don't get me wrong. I think in general, and most people have credit card debt, you know, the stats don't lie. So like, what they're doing is going to help the most people out there. But finance is not a one size fits all. And there's way bigger, it's a bigger conversation, like I said, than one size fits all. So that's what I was saying about the academy, is it's very situational. It's very, hey, here's all the education, but like you don't have to go through this exact framework that everybody goes through. Yeah. You have to think differently. Yeah. What if you have like a Roth conversion ladder, you know, potential, and you don't, but you're going through the 7 baby steps, you're not going to know what to do there. What if you have tax issues? What if you have estate planning issues? Like, is 7 baby steps going to cover that? No, it's not. And so I really respect what they're doing. I think they're fine in general across the board. I think they're going to help the masses, but I think they're, once you graduate, let's call it that 7 baby step program, there's a lot more to learn. There's a lot more to apply to the situation to really maximize your dollars. And that's kind of where I feel is if we don't align at all. I also think the investing advice they give out is like kind of like the 25, 25, 25 quadrant thing. There's no way that works. There's also no way there's a 12% return long-term opposed to like the 10%. They say they beat it by 2%. It's easy to actively pick actively managed mutual funds. It's just not how it works. and so with fees, net of tax, you know, it just doesn't work that way. So there are some things we disagree on, and that's okay. And I think everyone needs to understand it's 2024. We can still have some respect for people. We can still not align or believe or have the same exact belief. And oftentimes it's because like my agenda is different than somebody else's agenda, or my goal is different than somebody else's. And if I had the same goal as the individual, I might do the same thing they do. But because my goal is different, I'm not going to take the same pathway. And I think that's where a lot of people don't understand. I don't agree with Dave Ramsey in a lot of ways, but it's in a respectful manner that it's not to bash him. It's not to say that he's a horrible person or, you know, all these things you see on the internet. And it's just a matter of understanding what they're trying to accomplish is to help the masses figure out their debt problems, get, you know, financially aware. And it's not necessarily to optimize their finances. And I think the market they're trying to talk to is mass market. And that's okay. It's a business at the end of the day. He's a great businessman.
Yeah. No, it's a great answer. And one thing I love about this too is that you can do it your own way and you're not taking from his pocket. He's not taking
from your pocket. Look at things like this as competition, man. I really don't honestly look at anything as competition. Like I know I'm very confident in my ability to what I provide. So like I think it's corny. Like my team even asked me, like my marketing guys come in, like, who's your competition in the market? I'm like, dude, honestly, like I've never thought about it. Like good, bad, or whatever from a business perspective, like you can call it whatever. I just don't look at it that way. Like I look at it as like, I know I can help. There's 7 billion people in this world. I know I can help a lot of people, and like, I'm not necessarily just trying to make the most money possible. That's not my goal. So like, maybe if my goal was to like steal a market share from somebody, like maybe my thoughts would be differently, but like my thoughts are as help as many people as need to be helped and want to be helped and have a product that aligns with those individuals. And if those people find me, great. And hopefully we can find them to help them and serve them. But I never look at it as like me versus them or like the Ramsey crew versus the Budget Dog crew or anything like that. I don't even think like, let's call it financial influencers. Like there's any competition there. Like I just know my stuff so good that I know it's going to work. It works for thousands of people. It has worked for thousands of people and it's going to continue to help people. So like, sure. If you want to go pick this person over me, like go for it. I don't care.
Yeah. No competition, 100%. And it's really cool that you kind of create and custom made your own solution, because there's different levels to personal finance and you can create your own.
Exactly.
And you don't have to worry about that, but it's really cool, man. I like the thought of like giving people the more advanced steps, because a lot of people, and you mentioned earlier, everybody's in their own stage of personal finance and it's going to change as you get older. And when you get more established. So I think you can start at zero, you can start at 10, depending on where you're at. You can start today. But either way, you can start today.
Exactly. And my personal finance have shifted majorly over the last 10 years. And so we had $304,000 of debt. We decided to pay it all off. We're debt-free. And we decided to continue to build our wealth. But now, as you build wealth, things change. You have different obligations. You have different investment opportunities. You do different investments. You diversify. You expand. It's an never-ending, changing game.
Yeah. What's something that's maybe on the fence? What's something you can say to somebody that's on the fence of like, do I really need personal finance, or do you really kind of like, you kind of let them come to you?
Force anybody to fix their finances. Like it's on them. But like at the end of the day, like if you are lacking that much self-awareness that like personal finance affects your life, like I know there's a lot of avoidant behavior and people not believing they can do it, but a lot of that has to do with a mental and emotional thing and connection to money. It's like, I actually am so nervous about money, I'm just going to avoid it. Or I'm so nervous about money, I'm anxious about it, so I'm just going to like say I don't care about it. And they're going to take a reverse stance on it. But this is why we have our behavioral psychologist. Because that alone, somebody sitting on the sideline is just fearful, is just scared. There is nothing in this world that you can tell me that doesn't matter for somebody's life and family. And I think everybody would honestly agree with that. I don't think that's like even a hot take. So for somebody, I'm not going to ever force somebody, but what I'll say is if you really want to change your life, you have to take action. I'm an action taker and that's what I thrive on. Like I have to have, I don't react based on fear. If anything, I feel fear and I go towards it because I know that's an obvious solution to the problem I'm probably having. And so unless I attack fear head on, not going to really get the results I want. And it's never, change is never comfortable. You're going to go through hard times. You're going to do things you don't like. But the thing is, when you do those things, the thing on the other side is a lot better typically. And it's not as scary as you once thought. The boogeyman was not as scary when he actually came out. There's a reason they keep the boogeyman to come out of the closet until the end of the movie. In every scary movie ever, the scary guy never comes out to the end. It's because the fear of the unknown is the scariest for humans. And that's a very, very well-known thing. So that's why every movie, scary movie, is built that way. It's because you're afraid of the unknown. And once you see it, it's like, okay, it wasn't as bad as I thought. I think that's the same thing to do with personal finance and development, personal development and stuff like that. You got to take those chances. You got to be okay with failure, and you got to be okay with moving fast.
One thing I really like your statement right here, and I really want to hone in on it, is that you got to take control. A lot of people, they take the back seat to their finances, and they kind of, 401k matches my investment, you know? And I'm like, okay.
They say the 401k is the company's, investment. Like, guys, that's your investment, by the way. That's your account, and you have to invest in that. Your company just gave you the option to use it.
Yeah. And then, like, I have a hot take. I want your opinion on it. I'm going to spring it on you. What's your opinion on dividend income?
Oh, So everybody that invests gets dividend income. Like, for the most part, if you're investing like some type of fund, you typically are going to get some dividend income. That's just naturally part of investing. Obviously, if you invest in this particular like stock or company, like there's a chance that company doesn't pay a dividend. But like, I receive dividends, but I don't go after dividend investing. Okay. One, it's very tax inefficient. And two, the focus on dividends shouldn't be the focus. If you're trying to grow your wealth, which I assume most people are trying to do, you need to focus on total return. Total return is capital appreciation plus dividends. And so when you're getting the total return, especially as a young investor, there's a lot of time on your side, a lot of compound growth. And if you're focused on dividends in a brokerage account, that's really tax inefficient. And so what I don't focus on that. You know, obviously I get dividends. It's part of the game. But I like to be very tax efficient. And so therefore, if I were to hold any like high payer dividend type of funds or stocks, they're going in retirement accounts specifically. But I don't in particular. So I focus on total return. I think the difference of dividend income, I think a lot of people use dividend income to the idea of like paying your bills and stuff. Like, that's the silliest thing to do ever. Because with dividends in particular, the dividend, if you aren't reinvesting that dividend, you are going to lose massively long term. And that's if you pull up any, financial graph, if the people that reinvest dividends versus not reinvesting dividends is substantial. There's this really popular graph on Google, and it's like $10,000. I want to say 1960 to 2017. You invest $10,000 in 1960 and you let it ride in the S&P 500 until 2017. For those that did not invest their dividends, they returned about $400,000. For those that did reinvest their dividends, it was like 2.6 million, I think it was. So there was a difference of like, I want to say roughly like $2 million plus or whatever. So it's substantial. And the long-term trajectory of it is very tax inefficient, very inefficient. And living off your dividends does not happen overnight. This is a long-term play. I think moving to dividends in the later stages of the game make a lot of sense for more stability and income. But early on, especially the demographic I'm talking to, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, somebody said it. This is why I asked. So I tweet this all the time. And every time I see a dividend tweet, because Twitter
is people are hot on Twitter, man.
they're so annoying on Twitter. And I'm just like, dividends are for rich people. And you said it right there, is that it, on the later stage of your life, once you're financially set, it might make more sense. You don't have to, you want passive income and you can do that. But like, it's not meant for people that have $1,000 in the account and they put it in their dividend.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, bro.
There's capital. There's the different stages of wealth, like we talked about earlier. There's like the accumulation phase, and then there's like the preservation stage. And so, like, accumulation stage, like I said, you'll get dividends naturally, but you shouldn't be like seeking high dividend payers out. Not to mention, like, seeking a high yield is one of the quickest ways to a quick death. Like, just don't do it. Like, you're going to get crushed, especially if you're like finding like a stock that pays like 12% in high, dividend yield. Like, there's a very high probability that's like not sustainable. And so, like, you got to think of it a little differently.
Yeah. That's going to be a clip for the dividend bros right there. And I said that was a crafted question, because I'm
always set me up all you need.
That was, man, I'm always tweeting against the dividend bros. I need some help. I need some bio content here.
Yeah.
What is a quote that is yours or somebody else's that you resonate with?
Trying to think. I have actually three quotes written on my board, and this is something that's they're made up quotes. I don't know, they might be used out there, but I say. It's bad to bet against me. I truly believe that. Like, there's something in me that, like, I don't like to be, I will prove you wrong. And that's just something I hold deeply into me. The second one is always take the hard route. I think taking the hard route is never sounds fun, but at the end, it always makes sense. And then the last one is nothing can stop you. And so I write those there in particular because you have to develop that mindset, because there's a lot that can come your way in business and in life and stuff. We've went through a lot of stuff with Logan in particular. So if I was able to, if I allowed that stuff to engulf me and take me under, it could have easily. It takes a lot of families under that deal with what she has. And so you got to get past that. You got to find ways to get past that. And so that's not only on my whiteboard, it's also on my phone. So literally it says nothing can stop me right here. So like, it's something I hold true to and I deeply believe. And I also like to see it every single day as a result. And it's not in an arrogant or conceited way. And I think that's what people sometimes take the wrong way. It's in a very confident way. It's in a way that I've experienced a lot of stuff and I'm willing to fight through, and I don't care how hard it is. I will figure it out.
I think it's a personal, I literally had a conversation with my buddy last night. He called me like at midnight and he was like 3 a.m. he works early morning and I'm on the West Coast. So he called me last night and I told him, I was like, you got to give yourself more credit than what you give yourself, because you're your worst critic sometimes. And sometimes seeing that daily, it's like, okay, I am doing something good. There's good results coming from it. I'm doing it the right way. You know, yeah. It's just a personal, like, it's an affirmation that you see daily to kind of push you to exist and do it over again every day.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an affirmation more so than a quote even. And that's exactly what it was. I remember specifically, I used to write on a piece of paper every single day. I am a seven, and it wasn't, I will be a seven figure business owner. I am a seven figure business owner. And I believe that, there was a book I was reading recently, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself by Joe Dispenza. And he was saying aligning your beliefs, thoughts, and actions all together. And so like saying that you're that puts you in the mindset that you are already that. And so like before we became millionaires, like I said, I am going to become a millionaire. And then we became a millionaire. And so it was more so like time had to catch up. Mm-hmm. But I already knew and was doing things like a millionaire. I was already acting as a seven figure business owner. I was doing all these things, talking to the people that were in those spaces. And then all of a sudden I became that as a result. And it was more so because I've aligned the thoughts, beliefs, and actions together before it actually happened.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's talk about your daughter, Davit Syndrome. I know you're doing donations. I saw you have a goal for, you want to donate like $1 million or something?
$1 million. Yeah, it's true. Dravet syndrome specifically. And so Dravet syndrome is, it's 1 in 16,000 children. And hard to explain. Let's put it this way. It's a form of epilepsy that impacts everything. So It could be seizures, which are very common, which we've really greatly reduced. It could be speaking. It could be talk or walking. It could be motor skills. Like it really touches every aspect of someone's life. And so like, for example, like she was getting a bath one time and there was a seizure that occurred because the excitement of like the water temperature as a baby. And so like a lot of things that parents take for granted, like you can't do that. There was like a time where we couldn't go outside in the heat. There was a time that a lot of the kids have ice packs that they literally wear like ice vests. The sun, the light, like inside of our house, that like we might have to close the blinds, the sound. At one point we couldn't turn on a blender. The dogs, we thought about having to get rid of, like literally getting rid of our dogs because somebody would ring a doorbell and like the barking would like cause a seizure. And so like we were like, it's push comes to shove, the dogs are gone first. And so like it really impacts, and that's just a few examples of like everything. So My goal is to, I don't know if I can share my screen, but I'm actually on my website, is we are donating $1 million to Dravet syndrome. And we just started that in 2024. So one of the cool things is that, and it looks like I can share it. Hopefully this is okay. We have this, you know, Dravet obviously connected with us and we're doing the donation here. This link right here. I can you see everything?
Yep. That's on the screen. Perfect.
And so we have $1 million goal. We've obviously hit 77% or 70,000 so far since, what was it, January 1st, I think, of 2024. So I don't really have a timeline on this goal. We're moving pretty fast and I know we will hit it, but it's just a matter of getting it out there, letting people be aware of it and seeing where we go with it. But I know we'll hit it at some point.
Amazing. I didn't know that was on your website. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a big thing, man. It's a big agenda for us. I'd say on my whiteboard back there, the only goal I have is that. So, you know, last year it was like building the business to X number of revenue dollars. And I kept asking myself, do I just want to keep increasing that? Like, at what point do I have like a purpose, a vision, like other stuff than just like, okay, we take it from, you know, X to X plus Y and X plus Y plus X plus Y plus Z. It's like, how meaningful is that? And so, of course, I want to increase the business and build that kind of stuff and have other personal goals. But like, this is a big personal goal that we have. It's also reflective of the Budget Dog LLC is the one that's technically speaking contributing to this.
What do you think the future holds for you? Because I think you mentioned earlier that you did not foresee where you're at right now. But now that you've kind of you're down this path where you're 5 years now, what do you foresee now? Because I think once you get traction, you can kind of know where you're going. So what does the future look like for you?
Yeah, my team actually, I talked to my team yesterday about this, my vision. And my team was like, hey, do you want to be the next Dave Ramsey? I'm like, I don't know. I like jokingly say I do sometimes, like I'll take over the financial space. But then like at the end of the day, like if I'm being real, probably not. Like I don't really care for that. I see the downsides, the pros and cons to everything. And, you know, for family, I don't know if that's the best venture for me. I want to impact a lot of people at the end of the day. So that's going to come with pros and cons. Like putting yourself out there to get the attention to help a lot of people also comes with all the negative downsides. So here. Like, I don't know really what it, I don't know exactly what that vision looks like. Actually in Asana right now, literally as we speak, I've been beginning building out like the 1, 5, 10, and 20 year goal for the Budget Dog. And I have some ideas. I have some more project based ideas, but as far as like where we go, I have a lot of confidence it's going to do really, really well. And I have a lot of confidence it's going to blow up even more. But as far as like what level or like, I don't know if you want to associate a revenue number with it or a brand awareness, you know, to it. I don't know the answer. I really don't know the answer. I just know it's going to do really, really well. And I have a lot of confidence from that regard, but like, I know the goal and the mission is to help a lot of people. And I think when you put that before dollars, I think things come together very nicely, even though you're going to go through some struggles.
What type of impact do you want to make on the world?
Yeah, good question. I think just like simplifying your like life. And I think like taking a step back from like personal finance, like the reason I got in personal finance was because our own story, we were paying off a lot of debt. We were doing all these things, investing a lot of money, trying to build wealth. Felt like we were at a standstill at one point, 23 years old. So when I started talking about having Budget Dog to come to life, it was more so about like simplifying your financial life and building wealth, basically automation to make your life simpler. But like what I've realized recently is like, one, I really like to talk about business building stuff because that's what we've been able to do. So it used to be I was talking about personal finance because that's what I did. Then I built a business. Now I like to talk about that. But the other thing that's also come up is like productivity. And I actually just tweeted this out like before we got on this podcast today about like a productivity hack that I use for just like efficiency purposes. And like I'm really big on getting your time back in the society that we live in. So business, money, productivity, whatever you want to call it, just simplifying your life and giving yourself more time to do what you actually care about. Because I think we're just built to like do this thing called work. And like most of us never get out of that grind. And it's always just like work, 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 something we don't really like or care about. And like, it's a very meaningless life. Ultimately, that's top of the, you know, let's call it the Budget Dog goal is like simplifying your life and getting back the time that you deserve.
Awesome. Where can people find you online? I think it's been a great episode. We covered a lot. Really, really fast. And I wish I had like, we need to do this again. I think it was a great conversation. But where can people find you online? I got budgetdog.com and of course your Budget Dog on Twitter, I believe.
Yeah, you can find me on pretty much all social medias, guys, just Budget Dog. Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and just type in Budget Dog. I'm sure you'll find me. I think Twitter and TikTok are Budget Dog _. There's a lot of fake accounts out there. I have one account in all those platforms. I will never message you about crypto. Just had somebody get scammed out of $10,000. Supposedly there was a crypto scam that happened. And some people told me after I posted about that supposedly the scammers typically like make you feel bad for the victim. And like the victim's part of it a lot of times. I don't know if that's the case. I don't want to put, you know, words in somebody's mouth, but like, that's what people told me. So like, just be careful. Don't, I'm never going to send you a link to ask you for money.
There you go. Thanks for coming on. If you like the show, go like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. We'll see you in the next episode. Thanks for coming on, Brennan. We'll see you later.
Appreciate it, man.
Hey, if you have any deals you'd like to submit to the Hive Mind and our team, go to hivebc.io. It's actually the Hive Buyers Club. Submit your deals and we can hopefully dispel your deal for you. Have a great day.